Okay, shalom everybody. We started last time the second paragraph of Orot HaMilchama. It was actually a mistake, but thinking as soon as we started it hit me that stuff gets a good idea. We'll go back to do the first paragraph, don't worry. Because the second paragraph is really a very, very basic point where Rav Kook talks about, he points out that all the heroes of the Tanakh are military heroes, are physically strong. And we spoke about that the reason is that there's one creator, as opposed to in paganism, where there are a lot of different gods, and the physical god and the spiritual god are two totally different things. In monotheism, it is very important that there is one god. And as long as we were in Galut, so there was a separation, that the picture of the ideal Jew got warped over 2,000 years. But now that we are returning to Eretz Yisrael, Rav Kook is saying, and that's what he actually did when he started the, it wasn't a Hezder Yeshiva, but Merkaz Harav, the boys there were encouraged to join the underground, to participate, and that was like the beginning of the Hezder Yeshiva here. We saw that Rav Kook in Source 7 talks about harmonizing the physical and the spiritual, which is a very important part of Unitarianism, of the whole idea of oneness, of monotheism, that there really is only one. And now we're going to do a couple of other reasons that Rav Kook relates in different places to the idea of the importance of physical strength or military strength. And as we said last time, Sach HaKol, there are about 10 different points, I think exactly 10 points, that we can summarize. Now we're going to look together in source number 9. In source 9, it's an interesting source, Midbar Shur, because this is one of the very earliest writings of Rav Kook. This is when he's still in Chutz Laaretz. As a matter of fact, Shur in Hebrew is to look. Shuru habitu uru'u. And Rav Kook actually Hebraicized his name on the front page of this book. It did not come, it wasn't printed in his time. It actually got lost for about 60, 70 years. Somebody borrowed the manuscript from Rav Tzvi Yehuda and never returned it. And I don't know if he or his son or grandson, somewhere along the line, not that long ago, somebody returned it. And what's very interesting is to see the ideas, they're very Rav Kookian ideas, but you could see when they were very boser, unripe,
right?
And here, Rav Midbar Shur is Rav Kook's drashot on Parshat HaShavua when he was the rabbi in Boisk, and this goes back to the 1890s. Source number 9, Rav Kook is talking about Esav and Yaakov. By the way, Rav Soloveitchik, one of his drashot in the Sefer 5 drashot, which he gave to the Mizrahi, gives a very similar drasha. I'm sure he didn't see Rav Kook, because he didn't know Rav Kook. He once said that he doesn't understand anything in Rav Kook. But it's a very similar idea on how Yaakov, when Rivka dresses Yaakov with the arms of Esav, that Yitzchak should feel that he's full of hair. And Rav Kook writes as follows. This is in Source 9. Al ken levashtahu imo bigdei Esav, v'chitzoniyuto haita domel Esav. That...
Are we on the same page?
Source 9. No?
Nine over here is...
Oh, no.
We got the wrong sheet?
I guess so. Hold on. Do you have Midbar Shur on these sheets?
We can listen.
Yeah, I guess that's what we'll have to do. I'm sorry, till I start looking and finding the other sheets, it'll be a bug again. Every time I'll say the source, and you can look if you have it. This is in Midbar Shur, page Resha Ayin Aleph, where, where Rivka, as if it were artificially, dresses Yaakov with the hands of Esav, the external strength of Esav. You remember that Esav is called an Ish Sadeh. Now also remember that in Kabbalah, it's based on the Gemara Pesachim, Avraham is called a har, Yitzchak is called a sadeh. Avraham refers to Yerushalayim as a har, Bahar Hashem Yerae. Yitzchak, Vayitzei Yitzchak Lasuach Basadeh, Chazal say that's also talking about Yerushalayim. Why? Because Yitzchak is the concept of sadeh. And there are a lot of ramifications, but regarding our point, Yitzchak was the only one of the Avot who really was a Ish Sadeh. He was a Chaklai, he was a farmer. As it says that when he was in Gerar, he was so successful, he got 100 times as much produce as you would have thought. And if Yitzchak is called a Ish Sadeh, and Esav is called a Ish Sadeh, now you understand how Rav Kook, there are a lot of different explanations, why Yitzchak ohev et Esav. Verivka ohevet et Yaakov. In other words, what Rav Kook, is a very long drasha, but I just brought a line here and there, where Rivka says that in order to get Eretz Yisrael, in order to be the continuation of Am Yisrael, we spoke last time, you need to have Akol Kol Yaakov VeHayadayim Yidei Esav. You need to have both. And that is why the machloket was that Esav was the field man. And Yaakov is Ishtam Yoshev Oalim. He's, according to Chazal, he learns Torah all the time. Now, the machluk it was, Rivka said, let us take the person, the son, who learns Torah, and put on artificially, externally, the hands of Esav. That's easier than doing the opposite. Because Yitzchak thought of doing the opposite. Because the bracha is the sadeh, asher berachu Hashem. The field of Eretz Yisrael is a physical field. Now, if Yaakov isn't going to work the sadeh, it's just going to go to pot. So he said, let's give the bracha to Esav. He's a sadeh. Yitzchak is a ish sadeh. So we have that continuation. And the spirituality maximum, it'll skip a generation like it did by Terach. We know that Chazal tells us, the Kuzari talks about that, how every generation had one sadik. So there is Shem, and there is Aver, and there is Chanoch, and there's one tzaddik in every door, but then it gets to Terach and it skips him, because he was an idolater. So just like it could skip a generation, but the segula, the internal segula, will continue, that's what Yitzchak thought was going to have, because he had to choose between the Torah and the Avodah. So Yitzchak went for the Avodah, and we'll hopefully get the Torah of the next generation, as opposed to Rivka, who said, no, that the Avodah is something more technical, more external. You can put on the hands of Esav onto Yaakov. And that is why, according to Rav Kook and Rav Soloveitchik, Yitzchak knows that it's really Yaakov who's coming. And that's why he's saying, hey, Hakol Kol Yaakov Yadayim Yidei Esav. He's suspicious because, hey, if Yaakov has both, then he has the best of both worlds. Then we don't have to choose. And, you know, halavai that Rivka would be correct. You know, it's not a ego machloket who's right, but halavai that Rivka should be correct. And that is how both Rav Kook and Rav Soloveitchik explained, Shezaya gamken tzorech el habrachot. Because in order to get the brachot, you need to have that physical aspect. Shal yedei Esav yeshachlel tachlit kolo shel Yaakov. Shimush b'midotav shel Esav letachlit tov. Using the good aspects that Yitzchak likes in Esav, but having it together with the Yaakov. Now this is a concept which is very central, again, to all the writings of Rav Kook, regarding the question of the balance between hishtadlut and bitachon. We all know that all religions have to decide where does God come into the picture and how much man and free will runs the picture. And we want to give a whole shiur on that here, that in the Eastern religions, as seen as expressed in the children's stories, like in Tales of the Arabian Nights, in Aladdin, right, where a little kid finds a lantern, and he rubs it, and out comes a genie. And the genie grants him three wishes, which is classic Islamic culture, that if you want to succeed, you need a genie. You need luck, what's called in Arabic, inshallah. Islam, the word Islam, is from, it's a Semitic language, so it's very similar to the Hebrew word lahashlim, to accept. And they accept the ratzon Hashem, what Allah wants, and it's a pretty fatalistic religion. They believe in predeterminism, and they limit man's free will very much. On the other extreme, most of us grew up in the Western world, where it's the exact opposite, where you do not find God in any of the children's stories. And all the children's stories, I always remember my favorite story, was translated to Hebrew also, the little engine who said, I could. That they have this in England or Hungary, a little engine, and everyone's telling him, you're too small, you can't climb the mountain. And the whole book is, he says, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can, no, you can't. And in the end, he gets to the top of the mountain, and he says, I knew I could. We're here also, fill in the blank, in the Western world, as expressed in Western children's stories, if you want to succeed, you need effort, right? That's the Protestant work ethic, which they got from us. That is the cowboys, right? The tough cowboys and go west, young man, and John Wayne and Rocky One and Rocky Two and Sylvester Stallone. All of these are classic American legends where it all depends on if you put in the work and you sweat and you train, you're going to succeed. Now, as a teacher, my students already know that this is very common, that when you're teaching Torah, you clarify things by giving this approach, and then you give that approach, and then you ask, what does Judaism have to say? And the answer is always a harmony of the two. The synthesis of thesis, antithesis, synthesis. Okay? And that especially in the writings of Rav Kook, where, as we saw last time, also he talks about unity. Here also, Rav Kook connects the idea of unifying hishtadlut and bitachon. That yes, God runs the world. Together with that, man has free will. And how the two interplay, that's very complicated, and we don't have time to go into that. But we are very much against predeterminism. We're very much against fatalism. Maybe the best example is from the Tanakh, where Mordechai tells Esther, when she wants to hide in the closet, mm-hmm. and nobody knows she's Jewish, and he says, "Im acharish tachrish leit kazot, revach v'atzala yavol ha'yudim mimakom acher." Right? If you don't want to intervene with Achashverosh, don't worry. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will save Am Yisrael through somebody else. Umi yodea im le'et kazot higat lemalchut. But who knows? In other words, he's not talking out of prophecy. Some say Ptachya is Mordechai, that he was a Navi, but here it's very clear. He's not talking out of prophecy. He doesn't know if Esther is going to succeed or not, but we have to do the hishtadlut. And that's actually all the Rav Kook is a beautiful mahalach. This, by the way, is such a central idea in the writings of Rav Kook, is a beautiful mahalach on Akedat Yitzchak, where Akedat Yitzchak begins with Vayhi Achar Hadvarim Ha'ele. What is Achar Hadvarim Ha'ele? Is it the previous story, two previous stories, three previous stories? Rav Kook said it's Avraham Avinu's entire life, because Avraham Avinu's entire life is a preparation for Akedat Yitzchak, where Avraham Avinu knows he can't have children. First thing we know about his wife, she can't have children. A lot of people don't even notice that Terach only conceives at the age of 70. In those generations, the 10 generations before Terach, everyone's giving birth at 30, 32, 33, 34. nobody before more than 40. And then all of a sudden you have Terach, who has this problem, a genetic problem apparently, with Yeluda, with reproduction. So, and his son has the same problem. And his wife, who, by the way, is also a cousin. So it must be a family problem. And so Avraham does the hishtadlut, and he takes hanefesh asher asu becharan. He takes all those chassidim who he and Sarah converted while they were in Haran, and schleps them all the way to Eretz Yisrael, because he thinks maybe it's not going to be biological. Ve'eschal goy gadol, I'm going to make you into a great nation. Maybe it's these chassidim. And not only that, he also schleps Lot with him wherever he goes, even when he goes down to Egypt. And why does he take Lot all the time? He's not such a tzaddik. But Avraham does the hishtaglut. He puts in the effort because he wants to make sure that Hashem's bracha has where to
dwell.
Where to?
Dwell.
Right. And that is also how Rav Kook explains, and I think Rabbeinu Bachai also explains, why does Yitzchak send out Esav to make meat, to hunt meat, in order to get the bracha. What does it mean to, in order to get the bracha? It's the idea of the kli, the Kabbalistic concept that you have to have the vessel on which the bracha is going to dwell. And again, that's the idea of nefesh bria beguf bari. And here it is expressed in the idea of, oh, it just, we don't have time to go through the whole, but all of Avraham Avinu's life afterwards, he says, okay, well, Lot isn't fitting to be the bracha, maybe it's domestic Eliezer. And Hashem says, no, it's not domestic Eliezer. It's going to be Zerah. So then Sarah has a nice idea. Hey, what about Hagar? And they have a miraculous son, Yishmael. And Hashem even chooses the name. It's a nice religious name. Sounds more religious than Yitzchak, Yishmael, right? And Avram has all the reason to think that Yishmael is it. Now, every time that Lot is kidnapped, or Sarah is kidnapped, and then Hagar runs away, every time, notice, according to Rav Kook, they are being kidnapped or running away with Am Yisrael in their womb, or in it, right? Mm-hmm. And so the potential of, so finally when Avram thinks, okay, Yishmael is it, and then Sarah says, no, kick him out of the house, Avram does not like the idea. Why? Hishtadlut. And this is a very, very, again, I mentioned my father's master's. He studied comparative religions. One of the best ways of understanding Judaism is when we compare ourselves to others. And on this issue of, yes, even within Judaism, the Rambam stresses free will whenever he can. On the other hand, Rabbi Nachman Mibreslev sort of limits it more. But mainstream Judaism is very much into free will, and also Yishtadlut, and also Bitachon, that Hashem also runs the world. Okay, so that's another point. Another point of why physical strength is so important to Rav Kook, philosophically, let us look together in 25. This is a very interesting source, and it's especially interesting, like I said before, regarding Midbar Shur, this is from Ginzei Ariya. You have it in your
room? On the phone.
Okay. Okay, Ginzei Ariya is source 25. Yeah, the easiest thing is to follow the sheet that's on the that we sent out. Ginzei Ariya, this is also a letter of Rav Kook, relatively early, that does not appear in the letters of Rav Kook. He's writing this during World War I, when Britain was attacked. And Rav Kook is writing, whenever, by the way, Orota Milchama, I mentioned last time, he's also writing about World War I, but all of these ideas are a lot more true regarding the Israeli army today. And Rav Kook, in his vision, clearly had that in mind. Here, Rav Kook is talking about Kasher Yavo Goy Lo Chasid, when an evil nation, V'napel al goy tzadik berivo, and they offensively try and take away land from an innocent nation. Sound familiar? Right? That's Hamas. And us. Ubilo mishpat amim rak bekoach hazroa. They don't go to the, there was no League of Nations there, there was no United Nations. They just try and go in and take it by force, right? Austria, Hungary, Germany. Yirtze linashel ami achuzato. They want to take away a nation from their inheritance. Parenthetically, the nation with the most important inheritance is Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. That's God's inheritance that Hashem told us that that's our inheritance. Okay, so just keep that in mind. Although here he's writing about England, who was attacked. Livgoa chosno uchvodo. Kinat am kazot shehi mitoreret lechamat nekam ulemilchemet magen. When a nation, goyim against goyim, but when a nation, a Gentile nation, is awakened with that feeling of revenge and self-defense, and what right do you have to kill our civilians? Kinat Hashem tzvaoti. Where does this zealousness come from? This jealousness? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who created man. And he was the one who created us with that desire to stand for our rights and to defend ourselves and to get angry and to take, vengeance against the enemy. Now, can you imagine what Rav Kook would say about the Hamas after what they did to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's children, right? But even the whole idea is kinat ha-tzedek shu'or Elohi olam ba'olamo. One of the midot of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is tzedek, justice. It is not just that an evil nation comes to take away an innocent nation. And that innocent nation, not only do they have the right, but they have a godly drive to defend themselves. And this is a totally different point, the point of tzedek. And that is why the heroes of the Tanakh, another reason why they have this drive to stick up for the Jewish people, and especially when they're going to want to attack us and want to take away our land, how can we, if all this is true regarding the Goyim, how much more so regarding Am Yisrael?
Would you say that this may be controversial, the Crusaders were using the same drive, they were believed pathetic that they're, you know, they were fighting a godly battle to take the Holy Land away from the Muslim invaders?
Okay, you know, the problem is, if a dog says, I'm a dog, and a cat says, I'm a dog, one of them is wrong. Right? So that's, you know, somebody might have, you know, theoretically a good intention, but when God gave the land to the Jewish people, he gave it to us. You know, they want to claim that they're the Jewish people, or they want to claim that, it's like saying that they're a cat or a dog or Napoleon, or somebody claims they're Napoleon, they put them in the mental institution, you know. That, and this already is connected with another letter of Rav Kook, which is a little different, but it's a little similar, so I'll already mention it. You know what? Let's do Source 24. I cannot not learn Rabbi Yosef Albo here. It is so beautiful. And you always have to remember, Rav Kook knows all of the Rishonim cold. And they are all, and that's what Rav Kook does when he synthesizes the Kuzri and the Rambam, Rabbi Yosef Albo, Emunot Vedeyot, Chovot Halvavot. There's a guy doing his doctorate now on Chovot HaLevavot in Rav Kook. And he asked me to help him find places, so I found, 20 places, and I said, wow, I never realized how often Rav Kook quotes the Chovot HaLevavot. Because most people say Rav Kook is a direct continuation of the Kuzari and the Maharal, and there's Breslov there, and Bekitzur, there's everything there. And that is one of the reasons why in Rav Kook's yeshiva, the younger people, you know, if you're going to be in yeshiva for 10 years, that's something else. But they usually start out with the writings of Rav Kook, because the writings of Rav Kook, they synthesize everything. And that's where we're at now in Jewish history, where, again, the arrow of evolution is rising, and mankind today wants to see how the Rambam and the Kuzari and Chassidut and Misnagdim, how it all harmonizes together, because that harmony sounds good, objectively. Even if you never learned music, you know, hey, that sounds good. And that is where mankind is at. So it was just, the world was just waiting for Rav Kook, or somebody like Rav Kook, to synthesize it all together. So it's interesting, this guy, I have to admit, I never noticed that there's so much Chavot al Vavot in Rav Kook till this guy has started doing his doctorate. Somebody else, I'm sure, is going to do a doctorate on Rav Sajigon and Rav Kook, and Sefer HaYikarim and Rav Kook. And there is a lot of everyone in Rav Kook. So Rav Yosef Albo is a very nice continuation of the idea, even though he was 600 years ago. This is in Mamar Dalid, source Perek Lamed Hey. This is source 24. Amar ata gibor leolam Hashem mechayem mitim ata v'rav leoshia. This is the second bracha in Shmona Asri. Did we do this last time? I mentioned this somewhere else last week. I was teaching Arota Milchama somewhere else. Okay. Anyway, this is the second bracha Shmona Asri that we know Masechet Tanit calls it Gvurot. Why is it called Gvurot? Gvurot Geshamim. And it starts, Ata Gibor Hashem, you are strong. But follow this inside. This is mind-boggling. What is Ata Gibor Leolam Hashem? Mechayem Etim. He revives the dead. V'rav Lo Shia. He redeems. And then it continues. Somech Noflim, Rofech Olim. He revives the dead. He heals the sick. Klomar, Ata Gibor V'yachol Al Kol Davar She'yitzuyar Metziyuto Etzel HaSechel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have the Midav Gvura. Now we know the Torah talks about 13 traits of God. In Kabbalah, they talk about the 10 Sfirot, which are also basically the traits of God. One of them, I learned it with a Chabadnik, so I always say it with a Chabad accent. Keser chokhme bin gdul legvur et feres netzach oid yosoid malchus. Gvura, what is the Gvura of Hashem? That's exactly what we're talking about. Atagibor leolam Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also gdula and also gvura. Lecha Hashem hagdula vehagvura. What is the difference, in a nutshell? Gdula is that he is born talented. He has everything. Gvura is that he also can overcome, litgaber, he can overcome every obstacle. Now, what does it mean Hashem can overcome every obstacle? Ve'en gvuratcha kigvurat basar vadam. But Hashem's gvura, as we're going to see, is the exact opposite of the gvura of man. Kigvurat basar vadam, when people talk about strength, he lahamit et hachayim. Ugvurat Hashem yidbarach behefech, shilachiyot et hametim. Yes, that's beautiful. In other words, the exercise that we did last week mentally, I've done this many, many times, when I ask a group of young people to draw a gibor, a strong person, one of the most common pictures is a boxer with bulging muscles, no kippah, no tzitzit, just, you know, not dressed too much, young, strong. And his goal is to come into the ring and knock his opponent down. In other words, strength regarding people is mepil omdim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the exact opposite. He takes someone who is down and picks them up. Somech noflim. Right? A boxer, very often, he'll send his opponent to the hospital. Right? That he is, makes somebody who's healthy, makes him sick. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ata Gibor Leolam Hashem, Rofe Cholim. See, it's the exact opposite. In the Soviet Union, the person who was strong, if he wants to send you to Siberia, he sends you to Siberia. Or they kidnap you, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the exact opposite. Matir Asurim. Yeah. We have to have a lot of kavanah on that today with all the 240 hostages. But that is the Gvura of Hashem. And when we look at the Tanakh, this is our imitatio Dei. The concept of Tzelem Elokim, that we want to copy. Litzalem is to copy. We want to copy God. It's from the root tzel, shadow. Where your shadow copies, I raise my hand, my shadow copies me. We are meant to copy God. Now, I think most religions copy their God. Again, that's what's called imitatio Dei. But our imitatio Dei is we don't copy these bully gods like in paganism. We copy a God who is a life-giving, not a life-taking God. And just to sharpen this point, I'm sure I mentioned once when I was in Chomat Magen, this was during the Second Intifada, and Park Hotel. There was a suicide bomber, blew up the Park Hotel, killed like 32. They were most, right, Leila Seder. Most of them were tourists from France and England. And Arik Sharon, who was the prime minister, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. He sent out, anyway, the kids are, I was stationed in Ramallah, and we were, had given the intelligence, had gathered all the addresses of all the terrorists and where they hide their weapons. Don't ask me why we have to wait for an excuse to arrest them and to take away their weapons, but that's what happens. What? Yeah. These are things that we should have done years ago. Bikitsur, today, when I tell the story to my students, they laugh because they don't understand a world before Google Maps. So when we came to Ramallah, and we were driving around in an army bus, and there's an intelligence officer who gave each of us a paper and pen, and we have to draw our own map of Ramallah. You know, today you print it out in English, whatever. So he's going down the names of the streets of Ramallah, and everything is Mahmoud this, and Ahmad that, and Fatima this, and then he comes to a Japanese name. If I remember, it was Kwasi Akamoda. And I always liked trivia. And I said to the intelligence officer, wasn't that the Japanese terrorist who killed like 27 people in the Lod airport before, but they called it Ben Gurion? And he says, Boker Tov. Good morning. Well, you didn't notice? All of the names of the avenues and streets in Ramallah are named after terrorists. And the more Jews that they killed, the larger the avenue. You just kill two or three, you get a small street. You kill a lot, you have a major avenue. You kill a real lot, they name a junction or a park after you. Where their gvura is, again, that childish gvura of lahamit et hachaim. The more you kill, they think that's gvura. On the other hand, in the Israeli Defense Force, in the IDF, our army is for defense. And just like, it's like Moreshet Krav, Morak, that every Sunday, or almost every Sunday in the army, they learn with the soldiers history, war history, or motivation. Whenever I give, I'm invited to give a lecture in the army, it's always on Sundays. That's the day for teaching history. There is not an Israeli soldier who does not know the story of Roei Klein. Right? Classic story of a religious soldier who jumps on a hand grenade, absorbing all of the shrapnel in order to save all of his platoon. That is a life-giving gvura. Our gvura is a life-giving gvura. And that is the gvura of the Shoftim, of Shimshon, of Gidon, of Yiftach. That is the gvura of Hashem. That is the gvura, the heroism, physical strength, that we emulate. Again, the ideal Jew. Right? For 2,000 years, we didn't have that. But again, when we look back in the Tanakh, we're now understanding another reason why that is a godly trait. Another aspect of this is of the importance of gvura is found in Source 26. And this, again, is something, Baruch Hashem, we've been learning together. How many years, Gershon?
A lot. About 16, I think.
Yeah. Bikitsur, this is something that I definitely mentioned in the past. I don't remember if we saw it inside. But in one of the most interesting things when I edit the books of Rav Kook, is in the footnotes to give the background that from the letters themselves, you don't understand exactly what's going on. And in this case, the letter I should have brought it, was from Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook to his father. Rav Tzvi Yehuda was in Europe, and he was riding on a big Austrian ship. And the Austrian captain of the ship was bragging about this ship, that this Austrian ship is a really great ship. And all of a sudden, from the other direction, comes a British ship, which is even bigger and greater. And everyone starts oohing and aahing, and the Austrian captain feels a fadicha. How do you say in English?
He
has to put his foot in his mouth. And what he said was, just wait when we get to Austria, you will see in the port, we have boats even bigger than this one, than the British one. And Rav Tzvi Yehuda saw that this Austrian captain was really excited about his boats and standing up for Austrian
pride.
And that is the background of this letter. A lot of people don't realize what's going on. And Rav Kook, so he asks, Rav Tzvi Yehuda asks his father, is this good, this national pride that this Austrian has? And Rav Kook answers him in source 25. This is in Ginzei Ari'iyah, page Kuf Nun Chet. Again, this doesn't appear in the letters of Rav Kook. Kasher Yavo Goy, I'm sorry, 26. Hakin'a halu'umit asher orarta aleha vilamata otamia ostri. That zealousness or jealousness, the national zealousness that you learn from that Austrian captain, gamhi ish kodeshi. That is, here he's not only calling it tzedek, like in the previous source, justice, he's saying this is a holy fire. B'tiva shel ha-neshama ha-briyah. Who created the neshama? God created the neshama. And if people have this national pride, a healthy national pride, va-tehora, as long as it is tehora, right? We're not talking about German national pride that wants to put other people down, right? Anyone who's not German is untermenschen, right? The second class. But here we're talking about pure national pride, not at the expense of other nation. Rav Kook says this is ish kodesh. Mitzvah la'vi min ha'edyot. Rav Kook here is paraphrasing the Gemara that says that for the fire, for the altar in the Beit HaMikdash, you can even bring from a secular fire. You can light from a secular match and bring that into the Beit HaMikdash. And Rav Kook, he's just ingenious in his play on words, you know, taking that secular fire. Kinat amtivit. That is the natural zealousness that the French have it very well. Some of the Americans have it. Some of the Americans don't have it. In most countries today, you know, with the progressive liberalism, you don't find that burning nationalism as much as you used
sports.
To. Well, yeah, in sports. That's a good idea, right? That's a good example. In sports, that really brings out.
Yeah,
it's better that they take it out on the ball and not on the... Not on the neighboring countries. But what Rav Kook is saying, now, if this is true regarding Austria, can you imagine what Rav Kook says regarding Jewish pride to be a member of the chosen people? Of the Tzatzei Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov? Let's look in source 27, where Rav Kook, this is also from Ginzei Ari'iyah, that Rav Kook was somebody, I think it was Rabbi Hertz, or Rabbi Adler. He was one of the chief rabbis of England who was an anti-Zionist. Who was it? We're talking about the 1890s.
Adler.
Okay, probably Rabbi Adler. Yeah, I'm almost positive it was Rabbi Adler. And Rav Kook, he put out a choveret, which was anti-Zionist. And if you look at the names, he tried to bring as many anti-Zionist rabbis as he could find. He only found five. The biggest name there is Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, right, who was, everybody knows, he was an anti-Zionist. But Rav Kook, he goes over the whole Choveret, and he rebuffs and answers every single point of all these rabbis. I'll just remind you that Rav Kook was not the only Chovevei Tzion, right? Or Yitzchak Elchanan Spector was the gadol, he was the greatest posek. Everyone agrees with that generation. He was a member of Chovevei Tzion. He was a religious Zionist. So was the Netziv, Rav Kook's Rebbe, from the Velazhen Yeshiva. And that's where the Chovevei Tzion really grew, in the Netziv's Yeshiva. And Rabbi Yisrael Yehoshua Kutno, there were many, many, many of the greatest leaders who were religious Zionists. Nevertheless, one of the points that Rav Kook mentions there, where one of the points, one of the rabbis said, where is Zionism mentioned in the Tanakh? So Rav Kook said, Eza ra'aya tzarich al zeh. There are some things that you don't need to bring proofs. They're just so logical. Shira'ui lehov et klal Yisrael. You don't need a proof to love klal Yisrael. That's the ABCs of Judaism. Ulishtadel betakanato. And also to try and make sure that it's good for Am Yisrael. Also for the individual Jew. Also for the Jewish nation. Uchvodo. And to stand up for the honor of the Jewish nation. Kefia efshari. And that's why it is good. And a lot of times a Jew out in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, who has no connection to Judaism, doesn't come to shul even on Yom Kippur or Rosh Hashanah, but when a Jew wins a Nobel Prize, you know, he's proud, you know. And, you know, you find in Google, is Kleinman Jewish, right? You know, and everybody wants to know. And when Mark Spitz wins seven gold medals in one Olympics in the Munich Olympics, and then everybody knows that Sandy Koufax, probably definitely the best left-handed pitcher, and maybe the greatest pitcher in baseball history, he was Jewish, and Benny Leonard, the pound for pound. Right? Even in something as sports, Jews are proud. Hey, he's Jewish. He brings pride to the Jewish people. Now, if the Rav Kook says this is healthy regarding other people, how much more so regarding the Jewish people? Source 28, where Rav Kook talks about, he reminds us, that Am Yisrael is not just another nation, where again, this natural national pride is natural for every nation. Source 28, this is from Ma'amarei Riyah. Ein lanu klal litboshesh beotan amilchamot asher asinu litzorchei tkumatenu. We do not have to be embarrassed. It was asked a question. I think I know who the asker is, but Rav Kook left his name out, so I won't mention his name. Somebody who was, he's embarrassed of all the wars. There's so many wars in the Tanakh. Right. He says he feels guilty, you know, that what, this Judaism sounds like primitive or, you know, barbaric. And Rav Kook says, we don't have to be embarrassed about, first of all, this is the way the world used to run. Right? That's, and if you were, didn't defend yourselves, you'd just be overrun the next day. Unfortunately, the Middle East still runs that way, right? And so we don't have to be embarrassed of these wars. Litzorchei tkumatenu. Ubeota mistama asher oreranu bilvavenu neged hakamim aleinu lahakchid et kiyumenu. That anger, that healthy anger that we awaken against Amalek and against anybody, all the plishtim, they kept coming and attacking us. We have, and all the heroes of the Tanakh, have this justice, righteous indignation against these people, standing up for the right of existence of the Jewish people. Ilu im haita rak milchama chaim pshuta. Even if this was just a war of self-defense, like Rav Kook wrote 30 years beforehand regarding England, you know, war of self-defense, to go out and to defend your nation, defend your women and children, that is a just of it. Tzedek, he calls it. This is not an embarrassment when you are justified. And this is the next point. When we fight for the existence and for the defense of Am Yisrael, we are fighting the war against wars. That's our wars. Our wars are moral wars, to fight to bring morality to the world, to bring goodness to the world. V'nivrechu v'cha kol mishpachot adamah, Parshat HaShavua, last week's Parsha, Rav Kook explains, what does it mean through Avram is going to come bracha to the world? Morality. The world is going to be a much nicer place when people believe in peace. And our imitatio Dei, the God that we imitate, is not a violent God who's always fighting with the other gods, but he is a God of peace. And that's why we also, Ohev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, that's why one of the names of Hashem that you're not even allowed to say in the bathroom is Shalom. Because that is Judaism. We emulate a God of peace. So this nation, when a nation of peace and goodness and morality and monotheism is attacked by evil people, how much more so is it justified that we and all the heroes of the Tanakh stand up and defend Am Yisrael? It's not just a war to protect ourselves, or l'lachem al habayit, as they say. You know, that's true for the French or the English also. But we are fighting for the eternal nation, for the eternal Torah, for the monotheism and the Ten Commandments and the prophecies that we brought to the world, and that we keep improving the world. To this day, Israel, do you know that Israel has the highest rate of volunteering of any country in the world? By far, especially in the religious Zionist circles, by far the highest rate of altruistic kidney donors of anywhere in the world. Israel is, I think they even call it FIRST, F-I-R-S-T. It's Roshei Tevot for Fast Rescue something. Whenever there is a tragedy, an earthquake in the world, everybody knows that the Israeli rescue team, they're among the first there. It's unbelievable. We have an offer to save the Arab countries. You know, we're so nice and we're so moral and we bring morality to the world. So obviously it is justified to stick up for this. Now another point, Source 29, maybe this is the last point that we'll do today. Rav Kook writes in Ginzei Riyah, page 78, Source 29. Ki anachnu hushpalnu bagalut bavonotenu harabim. Now, for 2,000 years, Jews were kicked around, and that is what's called a chilul Hashem. And Rav Kook mentions many times, and again I want to finish off, but just to reach this one last point, when Yechezkel says that if Am Yisrael is sent to Galut, he says that is a chilul Hashem. Why? Be'emor lehem Am Hashem ele u'mirtzo yatzav. What? This is God's people? And he couldn't protect his people. I guess the God of Bavel is stronger than the God of Israel. And the Romans said the same thing. Ayei Hashem Elokechem. Where's your God? And that was what the Crusades were about. To show, like you mentioned, that God is Christian. Right? Look, we're defeating everyone. God is on our side. On the other hand, when the Muslims want to show that God is Muslim, they make a jihad. And anytime they want to kill somebody who is Christian or Jewish or not Muslim, they yell, Allahu Akbar, right? Our God is the greatest. Our God is the strongest. Now, that is a problem for us while we're in Galut, because if people are looking, they think that God is definitely either Christian or a Muslim, but he ain't Jewish. And that is the original name of Sefer HaKuzari. The original name of Sefer HaKuzari is found on the opening cover. It's not very catchy, so they don't use it. But that's the original name. HaSefer LaHaganat HaDat HaMushpelet VaBezuya. The book in defense of the downtrodden religion. Because how can we say that we're the chosen people and everyone's stepping on us? You know, hey, where's our... And the biggest Chilul Hashem, as we mentioned in the past, was in the Shoah, where even many Jews started asking, where is our God? Hey, where is he? Are we still the chosen people? Hey, how could we be the chosen people? And that's why Rav Kook says in several other places, with this we finish, that Am Yisrael has to stick up for Kavod Hashem, for the honor of God. And that is why when David comes against Goliath, and he says, Goliath, you cut down my God. And if you look in the Psukim, Goliath didn't say anything about God. But Goliath cut down the Jewish army. And David HaMelech is saying, you cut down the Jewish army, you are cutting down the Jewish God. As the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Nun Chet, that whoever, a goy who slaps a Jew in the face, it's as if he is slapping the Shekhinah in the face. And it's Chayav Mita. The Rambam brings it down the Halacha. It's interesting. Not, you know, I would imagine the same thing to spit on a Jew, your chayav mitas, because that's even more hitnasut, putting the Jew down. And the Rambam brings a dalalach. Why is it chayav mitas? Because he is spitting on the Jewish God, right? He doesn't know this Jew, never met him before. Jew didn't do anything to him. So why is he spitting on him? He's spitting on Judaism. He's spitting on the Jewish God. So if and when we are capable of defending Judaism and the Jewish God, we have an obligation to do so. And that's just another reason why, again, by David HaMelech, it's mamash mefurash, that he is sticking up that to stop the Chilul Hashem. When Am Yisrael was killed on Simchat Torah, that was a Chilul Hashem. Just look on the videos where all the Arabs are getting excited, exalted. Allahu Akbar. One of the survivors, she saw an Arab kill her friend. She said, he had the smile on his face as if he won the lotto. That's what she said. She'd never seen anybody so happy in the name of Islam. So when Tzahal is going in to teach the Arabs a lesson, to teach them that that is not monotheism, that is not the true. And you know what? I hope that's not real Islam either. But that's not our affair. They can decide what true Islam is or not. One thing for sure, that evil is not going to stand around. And is the obligation of Am Yisrael, Ohave Hashem Sin Ura, to fight against the evil, especially when the evil is fighting against us.